Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us, Trumpet Radio Live. This is the Tuesday edition on 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm as well. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, storms continue to hit the West Coast, including California. Pretty serious. We'll have details about that. Also, Chicago and New York, two of the bigger cities in the U.S. They're also in the worst financial shape among large U.S. cities. And why the first second of a job interview can make or break you. Some new research on that. Those stories and more coming up. This edition of Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. And we're online at kpcg.fm too, live link at thetrumpet.com. And you can listen to us on the TuneIn app, as well as find our programming on SoundCloud. All sorts of ways to listen. This is Trumpet Radio Live Tuesday edition. I'm Dwight Falk. Grant Turgeon is here today as well. And Grant and I, of course, we're big basketball fans. We enjoy a little hoops, a little round ball, as it were. And so anytime there's interesting NBA stories that come out, they catch my attention. And this is an interesting one. The New York Knicks, they reportedly don't know where one of their players is, Derrick Rose.
What?
He's missing. He just wasn't available to play in Monday night's game. And they asked the coach, you know, where's Derrick Rose? And he said, we're not really sure. Apparently he had some family matter to attend to. So that's pretty unusual where, like, nobody knows where the guy is.
Yeah, that really is. It seems like he's been kind of going off the rails a little bit recently. He has so much talent, but then he had obviously those injuries, which he couldn't do too much about, blowing out both knees, maybe even more than once, actually. And then he had that rape charge, which is obviously not a good thing. And then now he's just disappearing from the entire team. You know, maybe we should have seen some of this stuff coming years ago, because I believe there were accusations, like even in college, he was cheating on the SAT or the ACT.
Right. Yeah. Back in Memphis.
Right.
So that's what's really interesting about some professional athletes is that world of talent. Sometimes some questionable character. Not always, but sometimes. It's hard to find that guy that's got both, that's got all that talent and all that ability, and yet is a pretty high character person. So the Knicks aren't doing well this year, but they've got a collection of players that I don't think you can really build with, because attitude issues, you know, character issues. Mm-hmm. Even in reading about Derrick Rose's season, they said that he's upset with his coach, you know, no surprise. He was mad that he didn't get to play at the end of the game last week. The game they won, by the way. So the coach puts in players to try to facilitate a win. They get the win, and the guy that didn't get to play says, well, I don't like this. What, do you want to play and lose? You know, it's supposed to be team first, and I'm all about winning and so forth, but at the end of the day, they do want to make their money. They do want to be the stars. And So anyway, interesting. It's very rare that a guy just takes off. Typically, when you don't know where somebody is and you find out where they are, it's usually not good. It's usually not a good, you know, I don't think he was volunteering at the soup kitchen. I'm pretty sure something else is going on. So who knows? We'll find out.
Well, why wouldn't he have been more upfront about a family matter instead of sneaking off like that? That does really arouse some suspicion.
Yeah, it does. So we'll see what happens to Mr. Rose if he returns. There is, of course, we talked about yesterday, some of the serious weather going on the West Coast. They've been needing rain. They've gotten it, but too much. California, Nevada pounded by floods and mudslides, according to CNN. California, Nevada, and other parts of the West face more flooding, mudslides, and heavy snow as winter storms continue to pound the region. In California, a gigantic mudslide closed a section of Interstate 80 in the Sierras, and high winds felled that famous tree we talked about yesterday, the giant sequoia tree with the hollowed-out tunnel. So that, of course, was a big deal as well. They say after briefly reopening a stretch of I-80, it was closed again early Tuesday as state transportation officials warned that there was zero visibility due to blowing snow. So you can just imagine being up in those elevations, driving on those roads, and having zero visibility. That would be terrifying.
Right. They're getting hit hard. Better just pull over for a while, because we actually had something like that on our way to Arkansas. It took us 8 hours to get there instead of the usual four.
Wow.
We had, I mean, obviously there were a lot of slick spots on the road, but then even sometimes there were certain cars who were still going 70 or 80 on those roads, and they'd pass us and just blow up a ton of snow right onto our windshield, and you could barely see for a couple seconds.
Right. Yeah. If you have, especially if you have a big truck or something go by you, yeah, it blows all that snow up.
Yeah. It's stressful.
I've had a couple of times in life where driving and I couldn't see, and in most cases you do eventually just have to say, I got to pull over. You know, I can't. I've been in one where, back up in Wisconsin, where it was snowing so much, you basically were following the tracks of the person in front of you on the interstate. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't know where the road is. You just assume these tracks are the right ones because you couldn't see anything. And it was just covered up. So, again, same sort of thing. It took us a couple hours to go, like, 30 miles. And then we said, forget it. We're pulling off. We can't do this. Find a hotel. And then sometimes it happens with rain, too. Rain's so hard, you just can't see.
Right.
You got to just find an overpass and sit under it. And so for people that drive for a living, truck drivers, it's a pretty amazing some of the driving that they do, you know. And they've got to make their schedule, I guess. So they'll drive through some of that. I would not like to. Out there in California, they say there's more to come. Flash flood warnings have been issued for northern and central California, western Nevada, and southwest Oregon. Relentless rain and snow over much of the western U.S. will be reinvigorated by another powerful storm moving ashore late Tuesday. So they've had a pretty bad go of it, and now another storm's coming ashore. So what's the old expression? When it rains, it pours? Well, that's what's happening.
It starts pouring sideways. Yeah. I've seen rain where it's absolutely horizontal for the most part. I mean, just almost horizontal. It's blowing with such force, and it just really is a testament to the power out there.
Yeah, there was at one time, actually, we were walking to somewhere we had to go, and it was raining, and we had an umbrella, thankfully, but it was that, like you say, that horizontal rain. It doesn't matter. You can't do anything about it. You're going to be soaked. An umbrella is not going to save you from the those types of rainstorms. They do happen sometimes, and they're getting a lot of it out there on the West Coast. So, I'm not sure if that's moving into Central, if it's moving into Oklahoma. I kind of saw something on the news about maybe this weekend some storms.
Yeah, so we've had a pretty strange winter season where it'll get down to about 5 degrees, a little bit of snow, then it'll go up to 60 and sunny, no snow, nothing in sight, and then back down to a huge dumping of snow overnight and even into the negatives nearby. So we've been kind of riding the roller coaster recently.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. So I was thinking of, too, it's been a roller coaster ride. It seems like a few people have been getting sick, maybe a little more than normal, mm-hmm. And I think maybe those temperature jumps are messing with people. I don't know. That can get you sick, I guess. They have a new report out here about some of the big cities in the United States and which ones are in the worst financial shape among large U.S. cities. Large U.S. cities would be 200,000 people or more. And there's five things that they looked at to determine this. They looked at the ratio of a city's general fund balance to its expenditures, the ratio of its long-term obligations, pensions, so forth. The ratio of actuarially determined pension contributions to total government-wide revenues. I feel like I'm an accountant and a bad one. Change in local unemployment rate. Change in property values. So some pretty basic things that you would look at there. Here are the big cities, 200,000 people or more, that are in the worst shape. They had quite a long list. We'll just give you, about 10 or 12 here. And it goes from, we're counting up to the worst. So we're ones that we're going to mention first are in a little better shape all the way up to the worst. So this is a negative sort of list. Dallas is in this list. and 104th worst city. So we're jumping a lot of them here. 105th worst city is Houston. So Texas has been hit with that. Cleveland, not surprising, I would think. Some of those Midwest industrial towns, I think, you know, you'd assume they're having problems. Columbus, Ohio is next. Montgomery, Alabama. El Paso, Texas. I thought Texas was doing well, but these cities are struggling, I guess.
Maybe these people are biased against Texas.
Yeah. We want to look at your numbers. Fort Wayne, Indiana. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. St. Louis, Missouri. Reno, Nevada. Reno? I didn't know Reno had that many people. 200,000?
Yeah, well, I mean, all I know is it's close to Las Vegas, and so I figure if people don't want to live right in Las Vegas, at least Reno's kind of close by.
Isn't Reno's kind of like a gambling center too, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Obviously, to a lesser extent.
Don't they have that sign that says like the world's biggest little city or something like that? Yeah.
200,000, I guess, isn't. That's like a little over, maybe less than twice as much as Edmond.
So. Yeah, I guess it's not that big. It just seemed like it'd be smaller, but anyway.
Yeah.
Toledo, Ohio, and then the two worst, New York, followed by Chicago. So those are the worst cities as far as being in the worst financial shape. And so they have a lot that they owe to, you know, different funds they have to pay into. Don't have a lot of money in their fund balance. And then, of course, the property values and the unemployment rate are changing and not in a good way. So sort of interesting. And in related note, these are the top five states that people are leaving. Poor Wyoming, number one, is everyone's getting out of Wyoming for some reason.
Yeah, that makes no sense at all. Seems like that's where you'd want to go after all the craziness in the cities.
It could be. Nebraska, Illinois, which I guess would make sense considering a lot of people are getting out of Chicago.
Right.
Delaware and Louisiana. So Oklahoma was not in the top 15 that I could see. People are not leaving. They're sticking around. So Oklahoma's done pretty well. It's actually ridden the tide of recession pretty well, where we've, because of the oil and the gas. I know there's been a shortfall lately because of the lower oil and gas prices, but it seems like that always kind of bounces around, and it's rebounding a little bit, if I'm to go by the gas station prices.
Right. Yeah. It just seems like Oklahoma, or especially around Oklahoma City, surprisingly enough, it's always very affordable to live here, and the gas prices are usually pretty low because we have so much in the state. So, yeah, usually Oklahoma is pretty stable, even when other states are getting hit more hard.
We have a natural resource that people want, which is oil and gas.
That puts us on par with the Middle East, at least.
Yeah.
Hopefully we're a little better than that.
It gets really hot in the summer. Sometimes it feels like the Middle East.
Exactly.
Everything's dry and blown around. So those are some of the states people are getting out of and heading other places. And one of the reasons, of course, is jobs, people looking for employment. And they have this report out, why the first second of a job interview can make or break you, they say. Making a great first impression in a job interview can be the difference between getting an offer and getting passed by. And according to research, you may only have a few moments. I wish they'd let you know right away, so stop wasting your time. Just walk in, they're like, nope.
Well, it's obviously happened a lot, yeah. Right? I mean, don't owners or managers immediately think no as soon as a person walks in the door, and yet they still conduct the interview to be polite?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, I don't know that it's so much of a trend anymore to get tattoos. It seems like that's kind of died out a little bit. Like, you'll always have a segment of the population that likes that, but it was popular for a while. But, you know, sometimes you'd see people that would get tattoos on their necks, and you think about, okay, and they're young, you know, and you think, well, at some point you're probably going to want to go find a more of a stable job, more of a, you know, wherever you want to work, but... And that people are going to notice that the first thing when you walk in.
Oh, yeah.
That is the absolute first thing. You know, if I have, you know, we all have door-to-door salesmen come, you know, whether they're trying to sell you a new roof or, you know, cleaning solution, you name it. They come and they want to sell you something. And, you know, if somebody comes to your door and they got tattoos all over their neck and head and stuff, I you know, would not be all that eager to talk to them. Maybe that's very judgmental. I'm sorry if it is. But you know, it stands out. You do notice it. And so when I see young people like that, I always, or the funny piercings where like the ears are stretched way out and all that. I know that it's a thing, and for the moment it seems neat to them. But at some point you are going to want to kind of grow up a little bit. And if you go into a job interview and like they're saying here, within the first second they're making a decision about you, my guess is you're not going to get the job if you're looking like that.
Right. Yeah. Usually there are pretty much two reasons I can think of for why people would get a lot of tattoos. Some people just have an obsession with body art, like just making their body unique in some way. And a lot of the time it's like religious, like passages of scripture, conveniently not the one that says not to mark your body. But then the
Wouldn't
other people,
be weird?
Yeah, that would be really contradictory. And then the other people, they just have a few screws loose. Like you don't know what they've seen. They could have been in prison. They could be like a fighter or something crazy. And, I mean, it's just, you don't really know which one it is.
Or gangs.
Right.
I mean, it is a gang thing too. So there are different reasons, but in any event. Yeah. The one you always want to avoid as a guy in particular is the barbed wire around the bicep. Because when you get old and your bicep gets flabby, then it's like a sagging fence. You know, you see that.
People are just pushing it down and climbing over at that point.
The fence is loose there. You see that sometimes. But they do say here that employers are paying attention. And the first thing they notice is how you look, really. They say people make snap judgments about each other within one-tenth of a second. A Princeton University study shows, in a blink of an eye, hirers, interesting word, draw conclusions about your likability, trustworthiness, competence, and aggressiveness. I guess if you came in and tackled them, they'd be like, well, that guy's very aggressive. I like that about
you. If you slammed the door open and made a hole in the wall.
Yeah. I'm here. They say the study suggests that those first impressions really do stick, and that hirers quickly begin to expect you to conform to the ideas they've just begun to form about you. If you seem familiar and friendly, you could get an offer. If you seem sloppy or overly aggressive, you could be overlooked. And so they give you a few points here on how to try to take advantage of that. And again, you know, a lot of times if you can get your foot in the door, and if you are a good employee, people will notice that. But sometimes it takes a while to notice. And sometimes people are making the quick judgments.
Yeah.
They say the first thing you need to do is dress the part. You've talked about that. You went for your pizza job in a full tuxedo or a suit or tie or something. Your wardrobe, they say, should be clean, pressed, and well-fitting. The goal is to look like you belong at the company, according to Amanda Augustine, career advice expert for Top Resume, which makes sense. You know, if you're going for if you're going to do more of a factory job, you probably don't need a suit. If you're going to an office job, you might. You might need a little bit more of an updressed image. They say the career expert suggests job candidates do some investigating into the job's dress code by asking around within your professional network, which is a really good idea. Mm-hmm. Do some reconnaissance online and with your professional network to determine the company's dress code, she says. If the organization is laid back, dress as you believe they would for an important meeting with a client. So pretty sound advice there. But it is amazing how not everybody follows that. Now, like in your example, you were really trying to impress and you were young and, you know, it's kind of a humorous story. But if you're going in, you are going in trying to get a job, let's say, where they wear, you know, ties and you show up in a ripped T-shirt.
Right.
Yeah, probably not getting the job.
Yeah, I think the idea is to at least dress above their normal dress code. I mean, if you're going to go into a factory, you probably wouldn't wear an oil-stained work coverall, you know.
Right.
Obviously, you'd want to wear at least maybe a short sleeve collared shirt or something, tuck in your shirt. At least that way, they know that you can be presentable.
Right. They say the second thing after dressing the part is arrive on time. Nobody wants to look or feel rushed at an interview. Being punctual will help you relax. They say they recommend arriving 15 minutes before your scheduled interview so you have time to register with the reception. Complete any paperwork, use the restroom, and get your bearings before the interview begins. And also be there when they call your name.
That's right.
Is so-and-so here playing hard to get?
Maybe
I'll
makes
come,
more
maybe
interesting.
I won't. Yeah, maybe that's a way to do it, too. You just keep scheduling the interview and not showing up. And then when you finally do, they're like, okay, finally, who is this guy?
Act like you're too good for the place.
Yeah.
They wonder what's so special about you.
Yeah. That would be interesting to go in and like turn the tables, like you're interviewing them.
Right.
Maybe that would work. I don't know. Don't listen to my advice. I'm just giving bad advice.
If you don't need a job, though, you might just try it and report back to us.
It would be a neat social experiment.
Yeah.
Especially if you could do like a little hidden camera just to see the exasperation. And hear like what they said about you after you left.
Yeah, every time they ask a question, they'll say like, what do you consider the most important part of this job?
take notes on what they're saying. Well, we'll get back to you. Like you don't even let them say anything. You
know, I will consider your offer and see if I accept.
Very generous on your part, and we'll have to, you know, look around, and we have not offered you a job, sir. Well, thank you. I'm on my way.
It would take some real gumption to do something like that. I would never even dare. No. I'd be terrified.
We'll see you on Monday. In 2 weeks, I'm taking vacation. It'll be paid, of course. Then today, the third thing you should actually do is pay attention to your body language. This is always kind of an interesting thing. The goal in a job interview is to appear confident, professional, and friendly. Augustine says, a firm handshake, a smile, and eye contact are crucial to that. Of course, you don't want to just stare at the person. That's a little awkward. Not making eye contact makes you appear nervous, says career coach Becky Berry. Keep your head up. So normal human eye contact, I guess, is good. The dead cold stare probably wouldn't help you.
Well, you know they have to write about this because those things that seem so easy and obvious in everyday interaction just get really difficult when you know that they might be judging every move you make.
Yeah.
And so it could be instinctive to just put your head down and kind of avoid the gaze in a way.
For sure. And then especially, you know, if it's a younger person, because of this, how prevalent social media is and the internet, where if you're spending a lot of time in front of a screen and not talking to other people, it's kind of strange.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's talking to you and asking you questions, and if you're not used to it, you could make the wrong decisions.
Yeah, one job interview could be more than a teenager might speak in person to someone in a couple weeks. I mean, you have classes all day, and if you don't feel like asking questions or answering questions, you don't have to talk much, and then after school you can just text your friends. So
right.
Really not a whole lot of interpersonal reaction or interactions there.
Yeah, the interpersonal skills could be somewhat diminished depending on lifestyle. The fourth thing they say is to sound professional. When people are nervous, they have a tendency to raise their voices a bit. Studies have shown. Resist the urge, experts say. We tend to tighten the vocal cords when we are tense, and the high, sometimes screechy sound does not sound powerful. According to Patty Wood, a body language expert and author, bring down your voice within reason. Hello.
That's a cool job, a body language expert.
Yeah.
That would be really interesting.
Yeah, I would be interested to see what her body language is like, you know, because she'd be really thinking about it and thinking about the message she's sending, I guess.
That could be really helpful in an interrogation situation, too. I know they say, like, if you're looking a certain direction or if you have a hard time maintaining eye contact, that could mean that you're lying. So things like that actually are pretty helpful to know.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is, also, I think that if you know that, you can psych yourself out.
Mm.
You know, if you know that the person's looking to see if you're going to look at them because they're trying to judge, like, your honesty or something, then you start getting in your own head about it and getting nervous even if something's true.
Mm.
You know, like, for example, if for some reason I was hooked up to a polygraph, like, I think I'd be so nervous about it, it'd probably all, you know, because I'd be watching. I don't know if you can see the thing. But on the TV shows, you can.
Right.
The lights jumping up and down. And I'm just nervous. I know they ask you some baseline questions, you know, your name and stuff to try to figure it out. But yeah, it's hard to say. Some people, unfortunately, are very good at being kind of con artists and fooling people. But those are some tips that might help with a job interview. And but that's a lot of pressure. You've got 1 second to make it or break it. That's not a lot of time.
That's right.
Yeah. So maybe they should do it like they do that show The Voice, where you can't see the people. You turn your chair if you're interested. You come in, they got the big like, executive chair there behind the desk. He's not looking at you or she. and you just get to talk to them.
Yeah.
Then maybe they turn around and be like, oh, no, you'll never work here.
Well,
you're
yeah,
a monster.
Hopefully the person doesn't have green hair and like 100 piercings and tattoos.
Unless you're getting a job at a tattoo parlor, then you don't. That would probably be perfect.
That's probably the only place where that would actually be a good thing.
Yeah, and of course, in that realm, you could probably do whatever you want. People would be like, oh, you know, you could show up in a tuxedo, and you'd be like the tattoo tuxedo guy, and people would be fine with it.
Exactly.
I don't know whether they care. So those might be helpful if you're looking for some work. Of course, this one's happened, and this is kind of a funny one, and a good one, too, I guess. They say, this man's homemade sweaters are taking the internet by storm. There's a guy out there. He knits sweaters. I didn't know that was really a thing guys did, but I guess you can.
That's the first thing I thought, sadly.
This guy, he's great. He looks like, he sort of looks, in some of the pictures, like Newman from Seinfeld. Not really, but he smiles in a certain way, and it has that, like, that same sort of like sinister grin. But these are really interesting sweaters, and people like them. They say if you want a really great sweater, sometimes you've got to make it yourself. I've never thought that, but that's what they think. They say it's a lesson that Sam Barsky clearly learned early on, as a Baltimore resident has knit himself a collection of sweaters, reportedly 103 of them altogether. And these aren't your ordinary pullovers, they say. Barsky specifically creates sweaters with pictures of places, some famous, some local and mundane, and photographs himself at the places he depicted in his knitting. So he'll be like in front of the White House or somewhere, and he takes a picture of himself wearing a sweater with the knitted with like a picture of the White House on it. Hmm. So he takes these pictures of himself, he puts it on his Facebook page, along, I guess, with information about how he makes the sweaters, and it's kind of catching on.
Wow.
Like, it's so dorky that it's almost cool.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know. It's one of those things where it would be a real conversation piece. I mean, would you wear a knitted sweater with like a picture of a place, especially if you were in that place?
Yeah. I just, like, I would, I actually, now that I think of it, would like to have a knitted sweater of Mount Rushmore. That would be pretty interesting. And then I could stand in front of it, because that would give him incentive to travel to those places if he's already knitted the whole sweater. You know how tough it must be to knit a place onto a sweater.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that actually would give him a lot of travel opportunities if he was willing to follow it through.
I'm not sure if you can order from this guy. I would assume you can, but I don't know.
Hopefully.
The designer shares his process of making the sweaters on his Facebook page, where you can actually watch him work on the pieces. His pieces have received local recognition. He won 2 prizes at the Maryland State Fair in August, and now he's kind of gone viral with it. And so it'll be interesting to see. All that will have to happen for him is somebody famous will have to wear one. If you can get Kim Kardashian to wear one of your sweaters, done deal. Like, you're going to sell a million of them. I don't know why that's the case, but that is the way it works. Or if you could get like LeBron James to wear one after a game or something, everyone's going to buy your sweaters.
Yeah, it is what it is. That's just how it's always going to be. And hopefully, if that happens for him, he can pursue his lifelong goal of knitting sweaters and dropping his other employment.
You might want to get in early before the prices skyrocket. So this guy, the guy's name again is Sam Barsky, and he's got a Facebook page with his sweater creations. So he's embracing it. Like, he's not a closet knitter. He's telling the world, like, I am knitting and I'm proud of it, and here are my sweaters.
Well,
and they're kind of form fitting, and he's not in shape. There's a lot going on in these pictures. But the fact that he's just embraced it, and it's so sort of strange, it makes it sort of awesome at the same time. I can't really explain why, but it does.
Yeah, he refuses to be body shamed, apparently, and he's just going to wear his tight clothes. He's going to do something that's been stereotyped as a women's hobby.
Yeah, he's just going to knit sweaters, and they're spectacular. So check him out if you're interested. There's a story about him. His name's Sam Barsky, Barsky, and maybe get a sweater. I don't know. It'd be great. You know, really what he should do is, you know, you send him a photo, and he makes it and sends it back to you. that would be kind of interesting. It would be interesting, again, though, to wear one with a picture of a place that you're always in. Like here at work, we could have him make like the Armstrong Auditorium on the sweater.
Idea.
We
yeah.
just wear it there. And people would be like, is that the building on your... Oh, yeah, of course it is. And yeah, conversation piece. You got something to say.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. That's actually what I want more than Mount Rushmore. I want to get Armstrong Auditorium on my sweater.
Extra small. It'll shrink, don't
Smedium.
Worry.
Someone said Smedium during the national championship game last night.
Like a small medium combination?
I guess. He was talking about how the referee is quite chiseled and must have spent extra time in the weight room that week, knowing he'd be on national TV.
By the way, I think we were talking about this yesterday, and I forgot to mention it. Speaking of football, the announcers for the Packers-Giants game on Sunday missed a golden opportunity for a joke. Troy Aikman and Joe Buck, right? Mm-hmm. Joe Buck, who awkwardly looks at the camera when he's on, looks at Troy a little bit, looks at us. I'm a little... That's the sweater I want. Joe Buck awkwardly looking.
I've noticed recently that people staring at you makes you very uncomfortable because you were talking about the garden gnome in your neighbor's lawn that's looking at you, too.
Yeah, he always looks at me. Anyway.
It creeps you out.
It does. I'm not a sustained eye contact guy. But anyway, Packers had a good play. There was a, 20-yard pass to Davante Adams. He's being guarded by a guy in the Giants whose last name is Apple. It was Adam's Apple. Like, how often are you going to see that? Yeah, the two guys next to each other from their jerseys literally say Adam's Apple. Could we not make some sort of joke about this?
What a missed opportunity.
Missed opportunity.
It was just set up for them on the silver platter.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't do it. I mean, I know Troy's had a lot of concussions. But maybe that's why
he couldn't put it together.
He really has. If you read about his history, like he has some pretty scary stories about some of the concussions that he had. But anyway, so if anybody sees Joe Buck around or Troy Aikman, you might tell him about the Adam's apple joke.
Well, Joe Buck's had some head issues as well with the hair plugs. Like
hair
it made him lose his voice and everything too.
He almost killed him.
Yeah.
Every time I look at that guy, all I can think of is those are hair plugs.
Those poor guys. They're like the most combined head issues that you could have in a commentating team.
Right. They got to make bobbleheads of those guys. I want a bobblehead of me. You can get them, you can buy them.
Oh, yeah.
You can customize them.
That was a great invention, whoever decided to do that.
The bobblehead, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting with that guy making those sweaters. So good for him. He's out there and he's doing it. I guess knitting for a guy is great. I just never did it.
Mm-hmm.
The Key of David program is coming up here in a little bit on KPCG. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. A few topics today. Also talking about the topic of fasting, which isn't something that people talk about too much. It's kind of become a little more popular just even in the health way, mm-hmm. where some people will talk about that. But, of course, the Bible has a lot to say about fasting for spiritual reasons. And so he's got some good information about that. Very interesting topic today. As part of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, if you can catch it live, that's at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday, and then there's replays throughout the day. And it is online, also, the podcast at kpcg.fm, along with the schedule of programming. This next story is about a guy from Bangladesh who I saw a story about him years ago in the news, a really, really strange situation with him. He's called the Tree Man. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
Bangladesh's Tree Man.
Oh.
He has a really rare disease where he had growths on his hands and feet, and it looks like he has tree branches growing out of his body. I mean, it is. If you've seen the picture, if you haven't seen it, you got to Google it. He literally looks like he's part tree.
Wow.
And so, really terrible situation for him. He got a little fame for it. I don't know that he'd want fame for that. He was reduced to begging. I mean, he couldn't do anything, and people would, kind of help him out. Anyway, they've done some surgeries, and they got rid of it, which I think is great for this guy. They say the Tree Man is no longer, thanks to some groundbreaking surgeries, he can go back to being Abul Bajandar, I think that's correct, a 27-year-old father and husband from a small town in Bangladesh. He suffered from a rare condition that caused his hands to sprout tree-like warts. He lived with it for years before beginning surgery to remove the growths last February. Since then, he has had 16 procedures to restore his hands, and he will undergo a few more before he is released from the hospital. And so they're going to have a few more procedures to do. He suffered from this really rare disease, and the name, of course, is difficult. Epidermodysplasia verisiformis.
Good effort.
Yeah, good effort. At least. It's a really rare disease. They should have got a better name for it. There have only been just a few reported cases around the world. Basically, it's caused by a defect in the immune system, which increases one's susceptibility to HPV or the human papillomavirus. The branch-like warts grew out of his fingers, the palms of his and his feet. And the doctor that was working on him told CNN last February that Banjadar first noticed the lesions when he was about 10. Over time, the growths completely encompassed his hands, stealing his livelihood. He couldn't work, and making him the subject of international news because it was such a strange thing. Before the surgery, he could not eat, drink, brush his teeth, or take a shower by himself. His hands were completely worthless because they were just had these massive growths on them. The only thing he could do was scratch his neck. And he said, I just want to live like a normal person. I want to be able to hold my daughter properly and hug her, which is pretty amazing. He got married with this. You know, somebody still wanted to get involved with that situation, which is nice. But so anyway, if you ever look this guy up, he's the tree man, Bangladesh's tree man, and it is really, he does look like a tree. It is amazing. Thankfully, they got the stuff off, though. So I'm really happy for him because you can't do anything other than sit there and have people look at you.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure there's every one of us has something we'd like to improve, you know, like wake up tomorrow and we don't have this anymore or that. But they're usually minimal. I mean, you couldn't do anything in this guy's situation.
Yeah, that while you were describing those growths in his hands, I was getting chills. It was just creeping me out that a tree could grow out of the body. And I guess it wouldn't be as simple as just cutting it or something. Right. I mean, obviously, that would be really painful for him, so he'd have to get a lot of procedures for it.
Yeah, and they you know, it was attached, you know, to his hands. So it wasn't like it was just normal hands and then this extension. Like, I mean, it just encompassed the hand and then grew out from there. And I think, I don't know if they did try to cut it back at times, but there were some pictures where, I mean, it was so big. I mean, he was a tree. I remember the first time I saw it, it must have been 10 years ago. It was on a news story about him. And, you know, I it was a video, I think it was on the internet, and it said, oh, this tree man. I thought, what's that? And I looked, and I mean, you almost fall out of your chair. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy, you've never seen anything like it. And so, anyway, they're thankfully able to give him his life back. I don't know if it'll come back on him or not, but the indication is, at least for now, it's solved. It's how amazing, right, to not have your hands for all those years, and all of a sudden you do, and you can do normal things, and you go out and people aren't staring at you, and that would just be your life given back to you.
He's probably having to relearn how to use his hands because it seems like it's been at least a decade that he's had that issue, if not a lot longer. So,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, he probably is struggling to even pick things up and put them down, and I'm sure he's really thankful still that he can at least relearn it.
Yeah, so sometimes some stories like that come out, and they're pretty cool, so I thought it was worth mentioning. And maybe some of the listeners have seen him before. If not, you can Google it and see it. It's pretty amazing. And now there's pictures of him with his hands back, so that's good. Grant, you've got a story for us here from newsbusters.org. Sounds like Ghostbusters.
Pretty interesting site.
Newsbusters. Who are you going to call? Maybe that's why they did it.
Yeah.
Farewell to a decade of media drooling over Barack Obama. He has like his final kind of farewell speech or something. That's tonight, I believe, right? Tuesday night?
Yeah.
It's coming up. Sometime.
Yeah, January. Yeah, it's January 10th already. So that's right.
Yeah, and so this is the final hurrah for the media and their friend.
Yes, and they really laid on the hyperbole when describing Mr. Obama. And it started years before he was actually the president, when he was just a state senator in Illinois, and he addressed the Democratic convention in 2004. They were saying things like Obama is a rock star. He's the Tiger Woods of the Democratic Party right now. I mean, even years before he was the president, people were almost bewitched by him. I mean, they were just swept away and they couldn't even keep any form of logic to vet him, especially as the media when that's their job.
I remember, it must have been even a little before 2000 or right around 2000. Cause I remember I was still back in Wisconsin and, I saw it was like Time Magazine or Newsweek or something, and they had him on the cover, and I didn't know who he was. I'd never heard of him before, and I thumbed through the article, and they were talking about this rising star, and you know, and he's perfect, and blah blah. And they really were, you know, behind him. I mean, I guess I didn't think a whole lot of it at the time, because usually you have to be in government for a while and kind of take your lumps before you move up the line. But he was ushered right in. He had that really big. Oh, moment he gave that speech in, what was it? It was, who was running at the time? Was it?
John Kerry?
John Kerry. Was it him? Oh. Somebody was running. I can't remember if it was, it seems like it was after Gore, but I can't remember. In any event, he wasn't running himself, but he gave a speech at the Democratic National Convention, you know, and that really, you know, was like a huge moment for him. So he's had, like you said, this. The media has had a love affair with him from the get-go. I never saw any bad press about him. It was always good immediately.
Right, and it should have been disturbing even way back then that they weren't listing accomplishments. They were just talking about his characteristics. They would always mention speaking ability or just a quick wit or a good sense of humor that he had or even just kind of being a charming, nice person to be around. They never really talked about how as a senator he didn't even cast a vote yes or no on hardly any issues ever. So really there were no attributes that they could discuss. And that even came up with that UN resolution against Israel. He didn't vote either way. He just abstained from the vote and he still got his way from it. But that's something that we should have seen coming a long time ago because that's what he was always doing as a senator.
Yeah, I guess my assumption early on with him is that at some point he'd be vetted, you know, and he, because really everybody that comes up, they get vetted pretty harshly. And, we were talking yesterday about the Golden Globes and Meryl Streep. She made her comments about Donald Trump and said that she hopes the press, you know, really looks at him and everything he does. And I just thought, well, that hasn't happened with the Obama administration. You do have a few voices out there that have called a few things to question, but they're now labeled fake news or right wing, you know, blah, blah, blah. And really, in a lot of cases, they were just actually calling out, hey, look at what you're doing here. And the mainstream media, I can't remember too many times where that's happened. Maybe it has, but I certainly can't remember.
Right. It really was over the top with this one specific individual. And now they're returning to how the media is supposed to be, apparently. When they finally don't like the president, they're fine with vetting him. But this whole last 8 years, they weren't really doing that. There's so many crazy quotes in this article. It says here, one person said, it's almost hard to remain objective because it's infectious, the energy, I think. And then someone else said, a couple years ago, you would send a reporter out with Obama, and it was like they needed to go through detox when they came back. Oh, he's so impressive. He's so charismatic. And we're kind of like, down, boy. So I mean, really, they were just going crazy at being around him. They were like stunned, dazzled teenagers around a teenage boy rock star. I mean, that's just kind of how they were. And they were losing their minds, like all of Justin Bieber's fans, basically. That's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, and their job is to be objective as much as they can be. But the difficulty in that was because you'd have such a group that was so pro-President Obama that if you were one voice that said, well, wait a second, I'd like to ask some harder questions, you wouldn't get time. You wouldn't get questions. And so I can see where some were swept along and maybe others weren't as much, but they had to go along if they wanted to be a viable journalist. Mm-hmm. Because if you can't get access to the president and that's your job because he doesn't like your questions, well, what are you going to do?
Right. We've hardly ever seen anything like that where the president almost just decided to blacklist certain sources because he didn't think they were favorable toward him enough. And really that did hurt a lot of outlets that really seemed to lose a lot of access, and they couldn't get the exclusive interviews like some of these more liberal sites were, or these more liberal TV stations. And you could see why he was constantly having his ego stroke, so you could see why he might enjoy that. They were calling him something special. They even raved about his chiseled pectorals mm-hmm. while he was on vacation in Hawaii. I mean,
I get that all the time, too.
Yeah.
You learn to deal with it.
Can you imagine? I've never heard a president described that way, but apparently they were just crazy about this person. Then they decided to tout his prodigious talents, his amazing legislative agenda, which we just covered. I don't really think he did anything. And even in the real world, he didn't have much of a job. He was a community organizer, basically, someone who was – he was kind of a radical in college who liked to get into protesting. And then he became a community organizer, which is if you look into that, that's a pretty corrupt – career path as well. And then he just got into being a senator, and yet they're touting his huge achievements. They're saying he's one of our brightest presidents. He's a huge visionary, the perfect American, our national poet, and the most noble man who has ever lived in the White House.
It might be an over-exaggeration. There might be a few exaggerations.
I hope people can realize that those things are just outlandish.
Yeah, they are. They're when he ran in 2008 against McCain, right?
Right. John McCain.
The night before the election, public broadcasting, PBS, ran, I think it was Frontline, and it was, I think they do it every year before an election, and they give the kind of the story of each candidate. Now, the fact that they ran it the night before, there's not a lot of people that are going to probably change their opinion on what they're going to do at that point. Maybe there would be, but I don't think a lot. And they talked a lot more about McCain's history. You know, it was pretty balanced, it seemed like, except for the fact that it was a lot about McCain and then just a little bit about Obama. But the stuff that they said about Obama, it was very eye-opening to me. I didn't know a lot of it, and I thought, is anybody paying attention to this? He never really won anything. He kind of manipulated his way into office. When he went to Chicago and he ran for whatever you know offices he was running for early on, he lost, but he won on a technicality. Like he figured out how to manipulate the system. And they said, well, this is what they said, Frontline, okay, that he didn't have support of the black community. They didn't think he was somebody they wanted to vote for. When he married Michelle Obama, that was his in.
Right.
Did he do it for that reason? I have no idea. But that was his in, because she was well-liked in the community. And then all of a sudden, he's just on the magic carpet ride to the top. I mean, you talk about getting the golden ticket everywhere. If you're not going to be vetted in any way, if everyone's going to just say you're a genius. And what's so interesting about it is people, well, you're a national poet and all of that, but they never give you any reason why.
Right.
We're just supposed to believe it. And it is a love fest like I don't know that we've ever seen, ever, with anyone in modern times. Even celebrities kind of have their ins and outs with the media. But this has been just a love affair. And I'm very curious to see what happens now that he's out of office. Does it continue, or what happens with that?
Right. And there's a really good explanation of this media phenomenon in that booklet, America Under Attack, that we can find on thetrumpet.com. And that's written by the founder of this radio station, Mr. Gerald Fleury. And he just explains exactly why that might be happening, because it is something like we've never seen. Just people who are supposedly very smart, very measured, logical, common sense people, just absolutely losing really any sense of staying balanced or staying, you know, dignified in their jobs. And I mean, that really is unprecedented. It's shocking. And yet it really did help him become the president as well, because they didn't do their job. They didn't look into the fact that he had a radical preacher who was saying, you know, down with America, basically. And he had ties to a domestic terrorist and all these other really alarming things in his background. They didn't bring it to the surface, and then the people just thought, well, he's going to be the first black president. This is going to be history, and so they voted for him anyway.
Yeah, it's been a really quite a spectacle over the last 8 years, and I think it was talked about a while ago on the Trumpet Hour program here on KPCG that, you know, he had great power, I guess. He's increased his power within the U.S., but he was powerless outside of it. Mm-hmm. The United States' power within the world has definitely decreased in the last 8 years. We've mm-hmm. betrayed allies. I don't think anyone considers the United States to be trustworthy on any level. And we've tried to make our enemies our allies, and they're not having any of it. They're happy to take what they can get from us. And yet, despite all of that, people just can't get enough of this guy. So it's very interesting to see. And of course, like you said, if you read America Under Attack, you do have to understand that there is, you know, there is a spirit realm out there. There is power out there that influences things. You know, that seems odd, I guess, to people that don't think much about it, but that's very biblical. Mm-hmm. And that can come and go. I mean, that power can be given. It can be, you know, you look at certain leaders over history that were pretty, kind of had a similar thing going where people really were overwhelmed by them, and they don't have a great track record. And usually ended up doing some things that weren't very good. But again, you see that same sort of just people losing their minds over a particular leader, and that is usually a good sign of a bad sign.
Right, that's exactly right. And here's a quote also about this phenomenon. I think it relates pretty well to it, and just how we basically had this meteoric rise like we've never seen before, and how there really did seem to be a spiritual element to all of that. This quote says, "Obama seemed the political equivalent of a rainbow, a sudden preternatural event inspiring awe and ecstasy. He transcends the racial divide so effortlessly that it seems reasonable to expect that he can bridge all the other divisions and answer all the impossible questions plaguing American public life." So we can look back on those 8 years now and see, did he bridge the racial divide? Were there any good fruits that came from this? Or did he just receive this, you know, this positive wind of power that just really buoyed him forward?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about that quote, and then but you actually look at the truth, like the fruits that you can look at, none of that happened.
We're far more divided now.
Far more divided than we've been. And he has a lot to do with that because of what he would choose, the situations he would choose to comment on, the ones he would choose not to.
Right.
And so it's two different worlds. It's the fantasy world of this, crazy super fans. Yeah. And then there's the real world of what's happening. And those are two just completely different worlds.
Right. And it would be hard for anyone to explain in a simple manner exactly what his motivation has been the last 8 years. I mean, it's hard to even say if he has genuinely wanted America to be great these last 8 years. I mean, he must know long term that taking as much power to the executive branch as he has is definitely going to hurt the country, especially, at least through his eyes, if someone he disagrees with takes office like Mr. Trump. Doesn't he realize that long term the things he was doing really will lead to a more dictatorial presidential office in this country? And what about foreign policy? Can anyone explain exactly what he was doing to make America shrink the way it did on the world scene? Where is the sense to that, and what was his motivation?
It's all summed up in a rainbow. Like a rainbow. I wonder if some of these journalists will look back on some of the things they wrote and be like, what was I doing?
Let's try to erase those things from the internet.
Yeah, because it's just, you know, you can really support an individual and think, hey, they've got a lot of good policies. That's fine. But to say, like, they're a rainbow and they effortlessly, you know, bring everyone together and will solve all problems that the
crazy
United States has ever faced. That no human being could do that. That they're projecting godlike powers on a person. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy. I don't care who they are. No human's going to do that type of thing.
Right. Yeah. It just makes no sense that they could have really put aside everything they learned in journalism school, everything they learned about objectivity and being fair toward all sides, no matter your personal beliefs. It's just completely gone. And it seems like it almost single-handedly came about during this last presidency. I mean, we already knew that most of the media would be left-leaning a little bit, but at least in the past, they tried to conceal their own biases and present something to the American public that would actually be beneficial instead of trying to advocate. They're supposed to educate with the facts, not advocate for their personal positions, and they have just completely failed in doing that.
Yeah. That'll be the fascinating thing to watch when he leaves office. Does he continue to be this figure of adoration, or does he disappear? Because really, I don't think it has anything to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he's got some super ability of himself. It's you know, the office he was in and what he was being used for. So anyway, America Under Attack is a really good book. It puts it all in perspective and in a way that it will be really understanding and really interesting. And we'll see what happens with the love affair. Is it the end of the love affair, or will it continue? We will see. To be determined. It's like a soap opera. Join us next time when the same thing happens. That's all the time we have for today here on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for spending some time on your Tuesday with us. Key of David program, Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Those are coming your way. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.